Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
And I'm Adam from the Android Framework team.
Framework team again?
Again, you know, it turns out that the thing that makes the podcast work best for us is that it's like very low effort, and it's low effort to the point where it's easiest just to walk into the office next to mine and just ask someone over there. In fact, I can't even do that. I usually just do it through IM. So Adam sits basically where I can see you and keep an eye on you.
And yet it was me who reached out.
Well, you know, it's too much effort to use IM.
I don't know about low effort either. I had to wake up early and get here by 10, so I don't know.
We've had that complaint from numerous guests that it was really, really difficult to get here by 10. And since Tori and I arrived at the office somewhere around 7.
the sympathy factor is...
Very, very low. Yeah. Very low. But welcome to the podcast. Adam works on the framework team. I think of the framework team as mostly kind of the non-visual components of the sort of SDK, the APIs, the OSC kind of stuff in the Android platform. But you're actually a bit different, right? You work on more the build tools side of things.
Yeah. So I work on the resource subsystem in the framework, which ends up kind of sharing a lot of code with some of the build tools that process the resources. So I kind of straddle both sides of host side build tools and actual runtime device stuff.
Okay, so I think of you as working on AAPT, but you also work on the framework side that consumes those, that actually loads the things that
That's
are generated
correct.
By that
yep.
tool. Okay.
It's very important, I guess, for the same person to do that, because I looked in the source code at AAPT once, and I think that I got the impression that there's some header files that are sort of shared between the two, and there's some data structures that sort of get just packaged as a blob, and it's the same stuff on the system.
That's exactly it. Yeah, it's almost like a schema that we just mmap between, you know, host and device, yeah.
So let's take a big step back and actually talk about how resources work on Android, just in case, like, we have non-Android developers that are listening to this Android development podcast. So can you give us like an overview of how the system works, like going from, you know, building these things to actually consuming them and how applications interact with resources?
Yeah, definitely. The Android resource system is pretty neat, and that allows you to define different resources for different properties of the device. So you can easily specify, let's say, a layout file for landscape or portrait, or define styles for different versions of the SDK. And so what the resource, what AAPT does is basically just, and that stands for Android Asset Packaging Tool. And what that does is it essentially packages all these up into an easy to consume way for the device. And easy to consume really means low RAM usage. So what we're trying to do as much as possible is memory map these structures from disk into memory such that they're not touched and the device can page them out as needed so we can save a lot of memory. So doing that, though, there's a lot of kind of gymnastics that AAPT does so that it can construct these data structures in just the right way. And so that's why you get this object or this file called resources.arsc if you've ever poked inside your APK. Which is uncompressed, importantly. Some developers out there have been compressing it, which is a no-no. Because we're going to memory map that in, and we're going to lose a lot of these savings if it has to be uncompressed first, copied into RAM, and then sitting there as dirty RAM.
Okay. So one of the things that I think surprises a lot of developers coming from other platforms or environments is that they see all these XML files sitting there in the resources directory, and they assume that, you know, we're sort of parsing this XML, but that's not it at all, right? That's just like a build time representation of what the data structures are. And then you package everything as much as possible into ints, right?
Correct.
So that's
yeah.
not what it looks like in the mmapped version.
Yeah, basically. Every resource gets a number. And then we try to refer to that in the Java code as much as possible as a number. You know, whenever you look up a resource, it's just some integer saying, hey, get me this number. And that number usually ends up mapping to just some offset inside the resource table. Sometimes that offset is an actual number if you're storing a dimension or a float. Sometimes it's a path inside the APK to a layout file. And then that layout file itself is then, you know, has a binary representation that is also very easy to traverse on the device. But yeah, from the developer's perspective, you basically get this generated r.java class with a whole bunch of ints in it, and, you know, they map exactly to what you're looking for on that specific build iteration. You build again, those numbers may change. So it's very much a opaque kind of system for accessing these resources.
It's caused consternation and problems internally where if we change resources around by inserting things in the middle, we can actually break people horribly between different previews. This is before the releases go out, just because we do change the numbers according to sort of where they land in R.Java.
Right, right, and that's because your apps are relying on the framework, relying on a hard-coded set of IDs, and if those IDs were to change, then yeah, they would change what they point to, and you know, you'd have build time issues or runtime
right.
issues.
Right,
it's the same issue even in projects. So back in the Eclipse days, we had some bugs, I think, around updating the right class files when IDs change, because you know in Java, if these things are constants, Java is pretty happy to say, yeah, you know, I don't have to recompile that. So if you change something that's constant, it gets copied into all client usages. So you have to be really careful when a constant changes to actually update all the usages as well. So we had bugs back then where you'd run and you'd get some weird cast exception because you were looking up the wrong ID.
Yep.
And in instant run, we have to basically, whenever the IDs change, we turn off hot swaps for this exact same reason.
Right, yeah. So when you change anything in the resource area, you basically restart the app completely.
Yeah, and it's very easy to do this, right? You know, you're using the layout editor, you're dragging a new button. Now, all of a sudden, there's a different set of IDs, and everything alphabetically after will shift
yep.
by one.
Yep. So that's why you'll notice if you look at AOSP, any of the files that where we have attributes, you'll notice whenever we add new stuff, it's at the end of the file, and it's for this very reason, right? Because we're not going to sort of jimmy the numbers around just for kicks, right? So we always add to the end, which means that the old IDs that you used to count on will still be those same numbers when we generate the binaries. Okay, so that's the job of AAPT. And then there's the other part of the job where you consume it. So I don't know if there's any extra magic there.
I mean, it's supposed to be as straightforward as possible, as little work as possible to do there. There's some interesting stuff that we do with layouts as we're trying to kind of uncompress them on the fly, because typically when you read an XML file, you're iterating over it, you know, linearly, right? So we try to do things like uncompress as we go, so we don't have to uncompress the entire file in memory, things like that. But in general, it's a pretty straightforward mmap the file, and you know, pray that it is as it was built by APT. Otherwise, you're gonna run into some trouble.
Prayer, hard work and prayer. Those are the two elements of software engineering. So one of the issues that I know people have run into in the past, or which can be confusing, is that we do have these IDs reserved for the framework, and then there's the IDs for the app itself and potentially any what static libraries they're compiling against, right? So how right. do we handle that to make sure that there's not some conflict there? Is there like a reserve space?
Basically, just you know, preset IDs. So if you ever look at those resource IDs and you see in hex, you know, OX01 as a prefix, those are framework resources. Anything that the app builds ends up in OX7F, including all libraries that they use. Actually, the way we build libraries is everything is just assumed to be part of the app's resource set and just built as one unit.
Okay. So at what point, how many IDs do we have left to go before we just break the world because now we're running into app space?
Yeah, so we're purposely avoiding spilling into other prefixes for such a case in the future potentially. So far, you know, no trouble. We got lots of space, but we're making other design decisions purposely to avoid using ID space in the future. So it's complicating some other designs, but it's important.
Yeah. We'll hit it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Who could ever need more than 64K of memory? okay. So what's, I know there's various options with AAPT. Like you described the overall, like, you know, well, we just pack this stuff up and then we suck it in from an MMAP file. There are a lot of options in how you actually use AAPT too, right?
Yeah. So a lot of these don't get exposed through Gradle. Depends. Many of them, the framework itself uses, the platform uses. One of them is pseudo-localization. Actually, I don't know if Gradle exposes
that. I don't think we expose that.
No? It basically generates, takes your default strings, and it'll generate some other representation that is kind of still the original text, except adding extra characters or widening it or reversing the direction in order to kind of, you can test your layouts and design using to support different languages that maybe you wouldn't have translations for immediately. Things like, you know, bidirectional text and different Arabic languages. So that's pretty handy, I would say, to test your app without full translations for everything yet.
You can see immediately if you have strings that are not localized because they won't be using. So I think one of the modes, it replaces all the characters with similar characters, right? So instead of D, it'll use like a delta, lowercase delta or something like that, right?
Yeah, an accent a lot of these characters, yeah.
Yeah. So if you sort of see a string that isn't using that, you know, oh, that must be hard-coded somewhere and who's doing it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you can, and on the device itself, you change the locale to one of these locales. Forget the name. It's like AR dash something. Yeah, it's we could probably look that up later.
So if it's not exposed through Gradle, then how do developers use this to test their app?
So technically, there is this kind of catch-all AAPT options in Gradle, where you can just throw whatever you want to AAPT and it'll
okay, so
it.
You could do it manually through Android Studio. It's just not exposed through the IDE itself. Is that right?
Well, this is the kind of thing you would have to go into the build.gradle file, and you can add
my
like
favorite AAPT file.
Yes,
in
yes.
every project.
That's a big fan.
It's huge.
So you open that, and you know, I think inside the Android config, you can set up AAPT options. So if you have extra stuff you want to do, you can do it there.
Okay. And how do you find out about these options? Is there like a dash H command line?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you go out to the command line, you figure out what you can do, and then you go back to build.gradle because it's the best file.
Yeah. And just to note, this is stuff that we use internally, so it's fairly stable. But again, it's not really exposed in Gradle officially. So I guess that's part of the reason why it's not very well documented is because we don't know
APT
exactly if we want to keep this or...
Yeah, APT has a lot of options,
yeah.
And most of them we don't use, right?
Yeah.
There's the basic stuff like, hey, point me to all the resources, point me to all the assets, you know, and here's the package I want you to use. But then there's all this other stuff. So I guess there's the Zoodle localization. There's also something for overlays. What's that?
Overlays is actually how we... They came from a previous use case, which was we're building an app... but we want to customize it specifically for a certain product. These are usually for things that are shipping on the system image, so not really something that developers targeting a bunch of different platforms would care about, but it'd basically just be a way of overriding some resources, right? So at build time, it would say, hey, here are my base set of resources, and then on top of that, here are, you know, these few strings I want to override and change because I want to hard code the name of the product or something like that.
I see. So this is something that Gradle already does on its own because it sort of takes your source files and provides its own sort of intermediate area. And so you wouldn't need this.
And so Gradle does this much better. This is something that existed for slightly different use case back then. Yeah. And now it's still used, but for just the framework resources pretty much. On top of that, we're using that feature to hack around and have library support in the Android make tree. Gradle does this differently. Gradle merges resources itself and then passes it to APT so they can resolve conflicts in a nicer, better way. But so far, APT does that itself using this legacy overlay kind of mechanism.
Okay. Are there any other APT features that you can think of?
There are features for generating... spitting out files, like what resources have you defined as public? These things are probably less important for app developers because no one's consuming your resources, right? They're just...
Right.
Again, I think any more features that would be useful would probably show up in Gradle. It's just that these end up being a lot more system-y kind of things.
Yeah, so most developers probably just use APT without knowing it.
Yeah, unless it crashes. You shouldn't know about it, really.
Which it used to do. In fact, I know there's a few cases that we added lint rules for. Like, you know, if you happen to have certain syntax, it would cause like APT to core dump. So we added a lint rule to detect when you had this, like, hey, there's a syntax. And by the way, this will cause your build to break. But I haven't seen those in forever. Could probably take those lint rules out now.
Yeah, well... Okay, maybe. Let me know before you do that.
Okay. There was one that I heard of recently that would strip the languages you weren't using you didn't actually want to publish with your APK. I can't remember the option.
Do we not have support for that?
I think that's done by Gradle.
Oh.
Is it? I thought it was an AAPT thing that was not exposed through the tool.
Could be, but at least I know Gradle does this, right?
Okay.
So, and we use this in many different ways. So, for example, for instant run, you know, what you pick the device you want to run on first, right? So you're running on, let's say, a phone that has density, you know, MDPI. We are only going to tell APT about that density folder, and we're not going to give you anything else so that what you're packaging is just the stuff you need on that device, right? And there's a similar feature where you can say, hey, I care about these four languages. So even though some of your libraries, like, you know, support library has 50 languages, what used to happen was you'd get 50 languages for your app because some of your libraries had them, even though your main app didn't.
Right.
Right, which was not very fun. So you can tell Gradle, hey, I'm only using these 7 languages, and it'll only package those. And again, it sort of narrows down the world before it hands it off to APT. So APT doesn't know that this stripping has happened.
Oh, okay. I thought that was using APT options to do this.
So AAPT options exist for that.
Yeah.
To support the same thing in the platform.
Okay.
You can specify the configurations you want using option -C. And density is handled a little differently because you can have a whole bunch of densities defined. And some assets might not have a version for that density. Let's say everything is an HDPI and then one asset is only an MDPI, right? You'd still want MDPI to show up on an HDPI only build. Otherwise, there's no resource and you're going to crash.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if Gradle will throw an error for that or it'll just kind of fill it in.
I think it fills it in.
Yeah. So AAPT is the same thing.
I assume.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this came up recently because of the library thing where your app may have, you know, localization for two languages, but then you would be compiling against a library like Support Library or, I don't know, some other vendor that provides a library that has all these languages. And yes, their strings are localized, but none of yours are. So then the app would get confused at runtime or the system would get confused and try to go into some locale that your app actually didn't support. So then what you want to do is optimize the languages that are actually in the APK so that the system is getting the right information, but it wasn't clear how the developers were supposed to do that. So does Gradle do that by default, or you need to know that Gradle has this option and then go ahead and
yeah, you need to explicitly say, look, I want you to limit what you're packaging. So my app has all these resources, and normally you get the union of all the resources from everything you're using.
Right.
You have to go and say, this is the subset I care about.
Yeah, and then it'll strip all the rest of it. So it's also a size thing, too. Besides the confusion at runtime where it may be exposing the wrong locale for your app, you also want to reduce the size of your APK as well, right?
Yeah, and I think that, so this is called REST configs, which is how you configure it in Gradle. We also have, I think that's not the preferred way to do it anymore. We have something for APK splits instead where you get to say, hey, I want you to actually generate separate APKs for these different scenarios, because I think there's some support in a platform for actually having the different locales in different APKs. And so packaging it that way is a better way to do it.
Okay. So you'd produce an APK with all the languages you don't support. That'd
you produce
really
a base APK for the app, and then you produce a set of APKs that contain just the resources for the different, you know, just the densities or the ABIs, if it's a native app, all that stuff.
Yeah. And this is super handy because you avoid combinatorial explosion of configurations. Because you say, hey, I want high density in English, and maybe with that ABI. And then you have to create all different variations of that, right? But in this split APK world, you don't. You just create one APK that just has certain language strings, one that has native code, one that's the base APK, one with density assets, and then the runtime will select what to load.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice stuff.
So that sounded like the highlights of some of the options that developers may want to know about. Were there any others to call out? We're drawing a blank.
Yeah, I don't think. I think this time we did a decent job in exposing what developers need for that, at least for what we support currently.
Okay. And then we probably use, you know, more advanced stuff in the framework just because.
But the use cases are completely different. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Everything we do in the framework is just a little bit different because we are your inner loop.
It's a pain to support too.
Yeah. Okay.
So one of the sad things, you know, about APT is that, you know, you change one resource and you have to like rebuild all the resources over again. There's some optimizations for PNG crunching, you know, where I think there's a cache and it doesn't redo it all, but there's still quite a bit of stuff that has to happen over and over again. And we also talked about, you know, the other limitation of all the libraries, all their you know, all the resources get sort of mapped into a single area where there potentially are resource conflicts. So there's all these limitations in APD2. Do you have any plans to do something about that?
Oh, wow. Interesting you mentioned that. Yes, definitely. So I've been busy kind of rewriting AAPT into AAPT2.
It's a really creative name.
Yeah.
I like it. Is that like T2TOO?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Spelled out just like that.
Yep.
The idea was that when I started working on AAPT, we were adding features, and I found myself breaking a lot of apps out there. I don't know if anyone out there has experienced issues like that. But basically, the code base was old, fragile, no tests. So I basically sat down and I thought, okay, time to rewrite this kind of from the ground up, and what would I do differently now? And so one of the features that I wanted to support was incremental building. You have a lot of resource files. You tweak one layout and boom, everything has to be rebuilt. And that's not really developer friendly or fun or just seems wasteful. So APT2 is kind of built on this multiple phase model where we'll compile the individual resource files and then keep them in an intermediate state and then do a final link phase, which will sort everything out and produce the final APK and binary. And so far from the tests that I've been running, it looks pretty great. I mean, people have tons of strings and locales and images that they have, and none of those have to be touched again. You touch the layout, links it, fast compilation. So that's a really big win that I'm looking forward to getting out to everyone.
When will APT2 ship to the public?
We're testing it internally on a lot of our projects, and we're going to have Gradle support for it coming in the 2.3 release for Android Studio, even though the binary is actually technically
So it was kind
shipped.
Of a trick question.
It was a trick question. Yeah, so we don't promise when Gradle will support it, hopefully soon, but it's shipped already, right? Like it's in Build Tools 24, so it's available today for people to play with.
If you look in the directory, you'll know if you have it if you find a file called APT2.
Exactly. And it's a little tricky to use. It's meant to be driven from a higher level build system, build tool. So you'll find yourself invoking it many times for your project. But that is to support the incremental building and the parallelization. So this tool.
Yeah, so it's not a drop in the placement for the old APT. It has a different interface. But again, at least for Gradle users, you know, the Gradle itself will be doing this for you.
Oh, you won't notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except you will. That
it'll be faster.
It'll be faster. Yeah, exactly.
So how much of build time is certainly one of those things that we always hear from developers. It'd be nice if we can make this faster. Instant run is part of that. That's part of the build and deploy. But actually, just making it faster to build stuff would be great. And resource compilation is a big part of that. Do you have any idea of like how much faster this makes it? How much easier?
I don't want to say anything yet. I have been doing tests. It is faster. There's a lot of optimization to still do.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say much.
I mean, just between us.
Oh, just us three here? Yeah. Oh, okay.
We promise we'll bleep it out. The same number, we'll bleep it out.
The full build itself should be faster, but the big wins are going to come from the incremental building itself, which is going to be like orders of magnitude faster.
There's another aspect to APT2 that I'm very excited about, also for build speed, but not the incremental aspect really, and that is stable ID assignment, right? So instant run, we had to turn off warm swap, the case where you make a resource change and we just hot deploy it to your running app and restart the activity. Because of the risk of things crashing if IDs change, we completely restart your app if this happens. But with APT2, I think Adam is working on or has completed, I'm not sure where we are with this, but basically letting us hand back a list of ID assignments so that it assigns the same IDs over and over again. So we can make sure that even if you added an ID, it won't be somewhere in the middle alphabetically. It'll go at the end. Or maybe we'll leave gaps or whatever, right? But we'll have some way where we can make sure that the resources can be updated without changing IDs so that we can continue to live update your app.
Okay.
So it'll enable more hot swapping. You can sit and tweak your layout, your heart's content, without restarting the app, which should be a really big boost.
Yeah, that's correct. That's currently a patch sitting needing tweaking. But yeah, that's basically done.
Excellent. And, you know, we'll actually use that for a second feature too. So we have in Gradle, we have this resource shrinking feature where we, and I've talked about this before, but when you build your app, we look at which resources are actually used. And usually you have your own resources. You're not going to have a lot of unused resources, but you might be linking with a library that has a lot of resources in case you should use that functionality. So my favorite example is if you had the giant Play Services library, you would have all the assets for Google sign-in, right? If you don't happen to call that code, you don't need the resources either. So we look for the used code and we delete resources from libraries you're using. Well, that one could only delete assets, you know, layouts and drawables and things. It couldn't actually prune up the resource table because of the stable assignment issue. But now when we, if we have this code, we can do the exact same thing. We can repackage this and delete unused resources, which would help a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some other, wins coming along in APK size. One feature that just landed was stripping out resources that your app can never use because the MinSDK is set way higher than those, and they're resources that supersede it. Things like that, trimming out those kinds of, those are very low-hanging fruit that should have been there arguably from the beginning. But yeah, those are some interesting features coming in for APK size.
And isn't a perfect example of a thing that you, the developer, can't fix, right? Because you know, you may have a MinSDK of 17, but if you're using a support library that has min9, they're going to have assets in there that they obviously, you know, even if you're overriding it, they're not going to delete them.
Yeah, they're supporting many different apps.
Exactly.
And you might have a specific MinSDK, but someone else out there will be using, you know, exactly that MinSDK. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's going to change for the developer when the tool eventually supports AAPT2? Are they going to see any of this at the surface? Do they need to enable any of these options, or just by default their APK is going to be smaller?
I think for this, it'll be fully automatic. But there's this other feature we haven't talked about that maybe Adam wants to get into now about the other problem I outlined, libraries all sort of collapsing into the same namespace.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that one, it will be something you need to opt in, and because it will require code changes. One of like Tor said, when we merge libraries, we merge them all into one namespace and then build them like they're the app's resources. So you see yourself in layouts referencing your own package when you're referencing, let's say, an app compat attribute or something. That also means...
We basically, in Studio, we force everyone to use the auto package.
Yes, which is your package. Yeah. So what that means, though, is that if you have two libraries out there who have the same attribute name, they're not going to play nicely together. And you won't be able to really build your app unless you rename something, which is not very ideal. So AAPT2 supports namespaces. So they're kind of fudged because in the end, your resources all end up in that same, like we talked about before, that same package prefix, OX7F, for your IDs. However, the tool understands the name convention for these different packages, and it'll basically, from when you're developing, you have to reference any resources you use from App Compat with the App Compat package. And that happens in the normal XML namespace way instead of the schema for the Android package. As you see, you replace Android with the actual package name.
So in my XML file, I will have like a namespace called app, for example, mm-hmm. which will be the auto package, which will be my resources that I already have, sort of my strings.xml stuff. But if I use app compat, I'll probably want to put app compat colon, and I'll have the namespace for the app compat package.
Exactly.
And when I'm referencing, you know, resources from app compat, so if I'm using one of the widgets and they define an attribute, let's say recycler view is an, you know, so app compat's not recycler view, right? I will basically set those attributes with the recycler view prefix.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's no clash.
So then how are the library manufacturers, the library providers, saying what the packages are? Like what's the process for defining these packages?
It's in the manifest, same as the way we describe any of our packages. When we build like libraries, you also need to specify a manifest and give it some package name.
Okay, so it's a developer opt-in on both sides then? So support library would need to provide this in the manifest that builds this?
This was already, I think, the case, like the R class used this package before.
Yeah. Okay.
When we generate the R class for different libraries, we'll generate it using the package name that's in that manifest. So that should already be set up.
All right.
It's mostly if the library itself has dependencies, then it'll have to opt in. But if it's a Leaf dependency, then it should just work as is. Yeah.
So it's not using a new package name
specification
just for this.
Okay.
Got it.
But this is backwards compatible, right? So when I open up my project, things, and I'm using app compat in the auto namespace, that'll just work.
You're saying on the device?
I'm saying me, the Android Studio user, I opened my new project and I used the new Gradle plugin, which uses APT2. There's nothing for me to do out of the box, right? It'll just work before I do anything.
Yes.
But then I decide, hey, I don't want these things all to collapse into a single namespace.
Oh, yeah, correct.
So then you said I opt in. How do I do that?
I don't know if that's been decided. Yeah, in the Gradle interface.
Okay, stay tuned.
There's definitely a flag for APT, but I don't know how.
Okay, so it won't be in a per. Okay, so it'll have to be probably something that I do overall for the whole project, where I sort of say, okay, I'm now using new namespaces.
Yes. And,
okay, got it.
We should. Okay,
we need a refactoring to do this.
Since the podcast is going to be going out, I'm going to guess before this is available in Android Studio.
Editing this one, so it might be a while.
Where would people go to find out about what they need to do for this new thing? Would it be the Android Studio tools, like the release notes for that version? Where would be the best
place? Think we want to rely on people discovering it via release notes. What I suspect will happen is that we will probably offer some quick fix. Like if we see you referencing AppCompat or some known library, we'll say, hey, did you know you can actually convert your project, and there'll be some nice refactoring, hopefully. That'll just do it for you. Because if developers have to update all their layouts in one go, you know, that seems not very friendly and seems really error prone. Whereas we can do a pretty good job. We can look up every single resource, find out where it's coming from. And then if it's colliding, that's when it's risky, right? If AppCompat defines some attribute and you define it, we don't know if that was an intentional override or an accidental alias, right? And we need to ask.
Okay, so I was thinking of writing that, but if you got it, that's great.
Actually, no.
Welcome to today's engineering planning meeting, where we decide how things are actually going
to
be written.
Well, in my mind, this has to be, if the source code has to change, that this probably has to sit as a refactoring inside of Studio, right? Or did you think there was something you could do automatically?
No, mine was more for the internal stuff, internal trees, to have them automatically convert. But I think. It's going to be the same.
We probably should build this because, you know, there's a lot of Android code inside of Google, but there's a lot more outside.
Yeah.
So we should help our users.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Nice. Anything else about AAPT2 that you want to dip your hand to before it comes out?
What do I overpromise?
So actually, I'm curious if people wanted to play with it today. Is it even possible? Like the way you talked about like invoking it several times, it seems like, is that something people could even sort of toy with right now?
I mean, depends on how much you don't like yourself, right? But it's very much meant to be driven from either, you know, make build system. I know that's really, you know, outdated, but or Gradle. Actually, for Gradle, the way we're gonna expose it is as a library for Gradle to actually just plug into, and it can invoke the methods on it. So it has full control over the threading model and everything.
So it's not
hard to drive from the command line.
I see. That's interesting. So we used to invoke APT. It's a separate binary. You know, Gradle is written in Java, and so it doesn't like link in APT or anything. It basically just external process, go. You're saying now there's a library that it can call in process?
Well, we've had problems with that where...
Well, yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, spawning multiple processes takes time.
That's a problem.
Especially on different platforms. And then we introduced a daemon mode so that you're running in the background. But I think the right way forward there is to just, you know, call it from Gradle like it's part of Gradle. And the way it's been designed is that it's by nature it's single threaded on its own, and it doesn't have any global state, so it's very reentrant and easy to call from Java.
Cool, right? Great. Yeah, I think when the Studio 2.2 source code goes out after we hit stable, I think that, you know, there's probably a lot of the code that already is there.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that went into 2.2 to support it. Yeah.
Yeah, though, like I said, we probably won't enable it.
Yeah, I mean it's not quite ready.
Yeah. But you're working now on migrating the internal apps then? I guess that's the makefile angle?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why I keep talking about make. Yeah.
How's that going?
Oh, very well. Very well. It's just a matter of certain projects surprisingly do very weird things. Things I'm surprised even compile because at runtime they don't work. They just flat out don't work, but the compiler won't say anything about it. So I'm... on a project by project basis, converting and updating some of these projects, and that's something that will be interesting to see once we go out and ship AP2 in the wild to see who else is doing interesting things that don't work as they expect them to.
So is there anything you've learned from doing this where you saw what people were doing and you went back and changed APT2? Or...
Yeah, things I didn't think I'd have to support. Certain notations for accessing resources that I was pretty sure were illegal. And then turns out a lot of people use that. So I had to support that and actually make it part of the tool. Otherwise, there were people referencing styles and setting the parents to some attribute, which doesn't work. That just would drop that on the floor.
I'm pretty sure the tools don't handle that right either.
Yeah. So if the tools don't handle that right, then we should be okay for the public. It's just that the internal tree, you know, has seen many evolutions of different resource tool versions. So I'm sure there's some legacy stuff in there that app developers don't do, which is a good thing. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I know one of the areas we had difficulty with APT2 all along, I'm sorry, APT1 all along was the error reporting. It was very haphazard what the error message would look like and whether it would include a file name or just a line number or whatever.
The consistency was horrible.
It was. And so we have something like 20 regular expressions to try to find the different cases, right? So we can pick out the file name and line numbers. When you click, you go to the right place.
Yeah, there's a logging framework in there now. So it's all the same. Yeah.
Very good. I'm kind of torn about asking this because I'm hoping no one will know about it. So we don't have to support it in the tools. But I think that you added some new syntax for resource files, specifically around being able to inline icons inside of an animated list or something like that.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure we don't support it yet. So people use this in the tools. The preview won't work right yet, but we need to fix this. But anyway, what's that all about?
So that came from a need where when you're creating an animated vector drawable, there are three components to that. The animation, the vector, and what am I missing? The actual animated vector drawable that kind of links those together.
Yeah.
And many times those are all one-offs. Those were, you know, there's a vector specifically for this animated vector drawable, and there's an animation specifically for this animated vector drawable. They're not used anywhere else. So we implemented for N. I mean, N doesn't matter. It's backwards compatible with any platform. But it shipped with the build 24 tools, although not enabled in Gradle preview, right? But basically what it allows you to do is define these vectors and animations within that one file. So you have one file that specifies the animated vector drawable and the different components, and it points to them, and you don't have to name them. And they'll be given an automatic ID, and they'll be packaged just like normal resources, but you don't have to split them into a separate file and manage these three different files and... You know, you delete
it. So instead of referencing it, you just inline it, basically.
Yeah, you inline it, and you basically specify what the parent, where that resource is being referenced from in the parent. And it's a little detailed to describe over voice, but we do have documentation about it.
Is this a general concept for any sort of resource reference?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not specifically for animated vector drawables. It was just motivated by that. And so anytime you have a one-off resource that you created that you want to nest, there's a specific element tag to use to enable this and get it going.
So now instead of referencing a drawable, you can actually have an incredibly ugly and complicated layout file with all of the drawables inline instead.
Why are you giving bad ideas?
I'm just imagining when you said, yeah, you can do it everywhere. I'm like, oh, no, please don't.
Actually, so I'm going to quickly add a patch that prevents this.
But I think this is enabled today because, you know, if you're using Gradle with 20 build tools, 24, it would just work. There's no opt-in to this, right? We just invoke APT and APT will accept this.
Yes, correct.
Though, you know, we have a bunch of resource modeling inside the IDE and Gradle, which probably doesn't do this. So it might not work quite yet, but we'll get there. Were there any other resource file formats that you've done in the last year?
No, not much has changed there. We try to keep things as you know, backwards compatible as possible. So even though this feature itself was backwards compatible, mostly heads down on APT2. So everything should look exactly the same, except it should be better, faster, and more productive.
Yeah. Cool.
Better error messages.
Yeah, that's very important. Do you have any thoughts on image assets? So I know that APT does PNG crunching, right? Which
right.
does some optimizations to make them smaller. But there's also the option of using WebP or formats like that. Any recommendations from the framework team on that?
Not at this time for me.
Okay.
We're definitely exploring that going forward with APT 2. There are especially some concerns that have come up where developers have their assets compressed at a higher level using some different tools, maybe something like Zopfly. And then APT will go look at it, decide, oh, you know, there's not much to do here, or I'm going to change this color space a little bit, and then it'll recompress it, except at a lower compression ratio. So there's that problem that exists currently.
We had the opposite problem, and this was a big breakage in one of the 2.2 previews, but, you know, someone complained that we had made their files bigger. So we added this optimization where, hey, if the PNG crunching makes the file smaller, just stay with the original file.
Yeah.
That was really bad because it turns out it doesn't just make the file smaller. It also, like, process it in a very important way. And if you just go with the original file, guess what? You're missing some really important information.
That's exactly why this hasn't just been fixed, right?
Yeah.
So we've gotten bugs on this, and I've been investigating into it. And no, there is some massaging that happens that is kind of critical for certain platform versions. So it's something that needs careful thought and lots of testing, but I'm working on a solution to that.
Yeah. All right, that'll be an APT3.
I think we'll stick with the 2 for a bit.
Okay, all right.
So this has nothing to do with anything we've talked about so far, but I was just remembering one of the things I learned about APT early on, or resource configuration in general, is that we have all these directories where, you know, we basically categorize this is an animation asset, this is a layout resource file. But those directories are arbitrary, right? You can actually put your resource files anywhere because we're just going to end up producing, you know, ints to represent these attributes, right?
Yeah, basically. I think there's some lint rules and checking that Gradle does where it expects the assets to be under some, you know, standardized name. But, I mean, technically, yeah, it's just a framework-defined convention, essentially.
So it will cause, I guess the directory name gets folded into r.java
yep.
as, you know, the subclass, the substructure that it gets put into. Right?
Yep. And you can't make up your own either. It's
so it has to be one of the standard ones.
Yes.
But if you have an animator, it can go in the animation folder or the layout folder.
Right? Correct. Except not values. So values is very special. Things in values get compiled into that single resource table that you see, resources.arsc.
Yeah.
All the other ones get compiled into binary XML files left in their folder representation.
So, yeah, I've noticed some inconsistency in the convention that we use for referring to things as well. So the mention of values reminds me that you can refer to something as at string. Well, if I refer to at drawable, I'm actually referring to an entire file.
Yes.
That specifies that drawable. If I'm referring to at string, I'm referring to a specific value inside of the strings file.
Yep.
Right. So I don't know if
that's that whole values versus all the other folders. So
Values
are special.
Okay.
Yeah. Everything else is an XML file.
It can get even trickier because you can define your drawable in the values folder as an alias or something else.
Yes.
Don't do that. That goes along the lines with like the inline drawable thing we were talking about before. Just don't.
Yeah, this one actually is done pretty commonly.
Really?
Yeah. So because the example I can think of is, you know, we added some qualifiers to set the screen size. Like, hey, I want this to apply only if 720 dips, for example, for a tablet. But you also want it to be true for X large, which is older. Right. So if you want to make sure this layout shows up on large screens, you could duplicate it in both the XLarge folder and the 720 folder, or you can define it in one of them and alias it from the other.
Yeah, and that's totally supported.
Yeah, and that's done. So it's not quite as bad as the inlining, but it is true. It does make this whole like, hey, can I be sure this isn't in the values folder look up tricky.
But also you shouldn't have to worry about that. You shouldn't have to worry about where it is in the end, right? From Java code, it's, hey, there's a resource here, and that could be 30 references deep going in some crazy spiral and then finally ending up at some resource. It resolved. It's fine. You probably don't want to do that. That sounds really horrible, but you shouldn't have to worry about where these things sit.
No, and I think the IDE helps you with that. It's just something I bumped into earlier on when I was doing things more manually, and also when I was actually adding resource directories into AAPT.
In the tools, we care a lot more about this, so we actually will complain if it's in the wrong place. And I remember running into this because I was asking Chet about the animator stuff, which you added, and I'm like, hey, is this where does it go? Should it be in the anim folder or the animator folder?
Right.
And it wasn't really clear to me. The clear distinction on that. And you're like, hey, either one's fine.
Right. The fact that it can go in either makes that more confusing, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with interpolators. Like, well, you're doing them, you know, next to the animators. Why not? Well, there's an interpolator.
I think we should just have an opinion about it, and we should have APT2 emit a warning. How's that?
Yeah, that's
old.
That's totally valid.
I think that's kind of what's happening right now.
Excellent.
I mean, we did create these folders to create this consistency, but the fact that we don't require is not a hard requirement means that people aren't necessarily paying attention.
Well, I think that there were a lot of things that APT1 was not enforcing. So there's some pretty bad practices out there. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, we started enforcing it more on the tool side, we got complaints from people who'd done all these things. You know, they'd have multiple slashes, for example, that we didn't enforce before. So people will complain, I think, when we start warning, but I think it is for the better to sort of get things unified so the tools are all clear on where things are.
And I'm glad you're paving the way for that. Thanks.
Good. Yeah. That'll allow more optimizations.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is good.
Sounds good. Anything
I thought of one more thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, one more thing to bring. Private resources, right? So we added private resources as sort of a tool-side workaround last summer, I think. So
are these the tools attributes that you see?
No, that's something else, but that's also very awesome.
Okay.
So APT actually is part of the tools thing. APT basically takes the tools namespace and strips them out so there's no runtime overhead. So thanks for adding that. Or it might have been Zab, but anyway, it's an APT.
I'll take credit, it's fine.
Sure. But private resources is something we added where we sort of copy what the platform does, where the platform has a public file which says these resources are public, so they're the only ones you're allowed to access from the framework. So even though there's a bunch of resources in the framework that are used for implementation stuff, you can't access it from an app. But in like AppCompat, it's full of all kinds of drawables and things used to simulate the action bar that you shouldn't access, and they may rename it. So we added this thing where AppCompat can say, these are the 7 things that people are expected to reference, and everything else is private. But it was really kind of a tools workaround, right? So we have some lint checks that look up these files and you know, flag it. So is there anything happening in APT to more officially support private resources?
That kind of comes automatically with the namespace stuff. We support public attributes for different packages, and then if you were to include them and not spill them into your namespace, then yes, that's automatically enforced.
So AppCompat then can say, hey, these are the attributes that we want clients to use, and they put them in the AppCompat namespace. What do they do with the rest of their stuff?
Oh, no, it's all in that namespace, but they're not marked as public.
Oh, marked as public. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So the difference between the way we do it in the framework is the framework assigns an ID to it because that's a runtime, you know, dependency. It must stay the same. But AppCompat, it's a build time thing, so they just specify that it's public without giving an ID, and the tool will take care of assigning everything.
And if they don't say it's public, then it doesn't get an ID and you can't even see it?
It gets an ID, but you won't be able to build against it. And this is only if you're doing the namespace approach. So this is already a breaking change you're entering, and so this is already something that maybe the refactoring tool can bring up these issues saying, hey, you're accessing these private attributes, you know, this needs to be changed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent. All right.
Great.
Any final words?
I think that was my brain dump, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for your brain.
Let's map that into the image and runtime load it.
Uncompressed, yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks guys.